Well, some of our listeners may be experts in one kind of plant, maybe roses or daylilies. Most of us have a little bit of everything in our gardens, plus a lawn to work with as well. And we're lucky to have such a great group of UW Extension horticulture educators in our state who answer any and every type of question you can imagine. And they do it with a smile. And today, Patty Nagai is here to help. Patty is a UW Extension horticulture educator for Racine County. She has lots of great information to share. And certainly, we always look forward to her visits. Patty, are you with us?
I am. Good morning, Larry. How are you today?
Well, pretty good. You know, the kind of weather we've had, I'm glad you were able to be with us by phone.
Yes, and I'm very grateful I don't have to be driving back and forth to Madison today, even though the roads don't look so bad.
Yeah, and they're not, well, they're plenty slippery, and it's, you know, those corners you get off and down in the ditch, I wouldn't want you there.
Well, thank you. I don't want to be there either. I still have Christmas shopping to do.
Well, I tell you what, here, we have lots that we can talk about. One of the plants that I wanted to talk about was my lime tree. But first, let's talk about some of your favorite holiday plants. What are your favorite plants and why?
Well, you know, the poinsettia has always been one of my favorites. And I know it's traditional and it's, you know, maybe ordinary to a lot of people. But it comes in so many different cultivars and, you know, it's sold everywhere. And I can buy many of them and bring them into my home for the holidays. And then this may sound terrible for a plant-loving person, but at the end of the holidays, I don't have to feel so guilty about not having them in my home anymore and perhaps composting them, which is a lot of times that happens.
Yeah.
And it's a plant I don't have to feel guilty about it. So, but I love poinsettias, and I just think they're so... They just bring the essence of the holiday into a person's home. But the other ones that I enjoy, you know, orchids have become quite popular.
Yep.
And they are easier to find now and not quite so expensive. And the colors are magnificent. And they're not that difficult to take care of. And so those make a nice holiday plant, too. Cyclamens.
Mm-hmm.
Those may be my true favorite for a non-traditional flowering plant to give as a holiday gift to someone. If I'm going to someone's home for a holiday party, a lot of times I will bring a large cyclamen in full bloom because it is spectacular.
Yeah.
And also easy to care for. I try to avoid the poisonous things. You know, if I know someone's got children or, you know, dogs or cats, I try to avoid things that will make them ill. But, you know, there are so many choices this time of year to bring color or fragrance or both into your home or someone that you are bringing a gift to. Mm-hmm. Lots of things.
And Melinda Myers, I was talking with her last week. She was on the program. We had a great time.
Mm-hmm.
And she often gives plants, but she always reminds, you know, for a party or something, she always tells the person, now, when the plant is done blooming or at the end of the season, do not feel bad about composting it.
And, you know, that is one of the benefits of that holiday gift plant. You have to be able to put it in the compost without any guilt once it's done with its beautiful display. But, you know, a lot of them will live for years and years.
Oh,
and,
sure.
And continue to provide really beautiful flowers or fragrance or nice textured foliage to your interior. But, you know, you need to get over the guilt of it. It's a plant. You know, yeah. They will grow more.
Patty Nagai, our guest today. Always great to have her along. She's UW Extension horticulture educator for Racine County. Lots of great information to share, and you may have a question for her. Do you give holiday plants as gifts? What's your favorite? Or maybe you've got a plant that you have a question about, how to keep them alive and healthy. Or maybe you've got a fruit tree in your house, like I've got a lime tree in my place. In fact, I have a on the Facebook page, at the Larry Mueller Show. You go there right now, Judith Sears-Poisson, my producer, who's always does a great job, has posted a picture of my lime tree. in my house with all of its many blossoms. And,
is it fragrant?
Yeah, a little bit, a little bit.
Okay.
Anyway, so go to my Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show. You can see that. Or give us a call with your questions at 1-800-642-1234. I have got tons. You've got to go on the Facebook page and take a look at that, Patty. I've got tons of blossoms.
I must have. Right now, I'm logging in.
I'm looking at the picture, and I wish you had actually shown from the top down a little more, because there are a whole bunch of blossoms that are missing or that you can't see. I mean, there are a lot of blossoms. And you told me once what I was supposed to do. I was supposed to take a Q-tip, right?
Oh, are you going to buzz around and pollinate your flowers?
I was thinking about it.
You can do that. You know, the lime and lemon, the citrus, are very interesting in the way they flower. And mine are in full bloom right now, too. And for me, the fragrance is, because I have three of them, and they're large. Fragrance is sometimes a little strong.
Yeah.
but that's, you know, that's a nice thing. There are certainly worse things to have in your house. But the flowers are a little different because... I'm not sure how up on your botany you are, Larry, but there are male-only flowers.
Okay.
Male-only flowers, you will see a circle of stamens in the middle that have the pollen sacs, the anthers.
Okay.
That's the pollen sacs on the end of it, but there will be, like, nothing right in the very middle. And then if you are differentiating between the flowers, you'll look and you'll see the other flowers have that circle of stamens, but in the middle, they have this kind of shiny bulbous thing right in the middle, right at
about
the same height as the pollen sacs. So that is the female part of the flower. So some of your flowers will be what are called perfect flowers because they have all of the parts.
Okay.
And then some of them will only be male. And so those male flowers will produce the pollen, but they can never form fruit because they're missing the female parts.
Okay.
So you probably didn't realize we were going to be talking about sex today on radio, but
I didn't. But it's interesting.
And it is, and you know, if you look at the flowers carefully, you'll see the difference right away. And so you can either pull those male flowers off and use those to pollinate some of those other flowers. And you just need to get a little bit of pollen right on that sticky surface in the center of the flower that's shiny.
Mm-hmm.
Or you could use a Q-tip, or you could use your fingertips. You can, you know, do it any number of ways in order to transfer pollen. It's best to do it first thing in the morning.
Okay.
And make sure that you're selecting fresh flowers. You know, flowers that have newly opened; those will be the best.
Okay. Well, I've taken notes on this, and tomorrow morning, bright and early,
you're going
will
to
be
make
up.
Your bee sounds.
I'm going to buzz downstairs to our area there with the lime tree and yeah. do the deed.
Your lime tree looks very healthy,
and you'll notice there is some aluminum foil around the base of the plant, and that is to keep Mr. Coco, our cat,
out of the tree.
Where he likes to go in.
Mm-hmm.
But he won't do it if there's aluminum foil in there.
And that's a really good method for keeping animals out of container pots, to use aluminum foil. An alternative is to get some hardware cloth.
Yep.
Or even chicken wire, but hardware cloth works a little better. And then make a little cover for the top of your soil, because they don't really, you know, they don't like the way that feels on their feet, and so it completely eliminates that that urge for them to dig in the soil, because they can't, you know. Mm. The hardware cloth stops them, yet it doesn't interfere with your ability to water the plant or anything else.
Richard in Rhinelander has a question for you, Patty, so
okay,
let's go there. Hi, Richard, thank you for calling.
Thank you. I appreciate the opportunity. I really appreciate your show very much. The question I have for Patty, it has nothing to do with holiday plants. I have cherry tomato seeds from our cherry tomatoes, and I wonder, mm-hmm. can I raise them in the winter in a bucket in the house if I have a growing light? Is that possible?
It is possible, but if you collected seeds from your cherry tomatoes, and those cherry tomatoes were not open-pollinated varieties, if they were hybrids, the plants that you get are going to be very different from the plant that you had in your garden this year.
They weren't hybrids. I didn't want to buy hybrids. I wanted to be able to collect seeds.
Oh, okay. Okay. If you know that they were open pollinated varieties of tomato that were not hybrids.
They were heirloom. They were heirloom.
Okay. You should be okay if they were heirloom tomato seeds, because those should breed true and you should get a nice selection of plants. If you're going to do it inside, it's really important to have enough light to support the plant growth as well as the flowering. So we're concerned about two things: light quality as well as light duration. And so if you can put them in a container, and the container needs to have enough soil and enough nutrients to support that vine growth, flowering, and fruiting. And so for fruiting and flowering type plants, you can use a soilless mixture, but it's usually better if you can include some real soil in the mixture. And I don't mean going out to your garden and digging under the snow and getting soil out of your garden, but you can purchase sterilized potting soil to mix with a bag of soilless, the routine type of potting mixture, and so that you can supply a little bit more nutrients and give them a little bit more base. Each plant needs to have at least maybe 3 or 4 gallons of soil. So we're talking about at minimum a 12 to 14 inch pot to support the growth.
Well, then a 5 gallon pail would do it, wouldn't it?
Oh, that would be plenty. Yep, that would work well.
Yeah.
And then you need to have it not only in front of a window, but you will need to support it with some additional supplemental light.
Well, that is wonderful. I really appreciate that. I enjoy growing things, and it will make the winter months green. Thank you.
And I hope it works for you. Peppers actually work better than tomatoes this way, but I've seen people have some success doing tomatoes inside over the winter as long as they keep the conditions right for them.
All right.
So good luck.
Thanks, Richard. Thank you very much for calling. Louise in Green Bay, hello to you.
Oh, my question is about poinsettias.
Okay.
And I have a couple of smaller ones that I bought, and I've been just inundated with fruit flies or the like. And I don't really want to use an insecticidal spray, but I think if I have to, I'll probably just spray it and keep it in a plastic bag for a couple days so that my pet does not is not affected by it. But you really can't use insecticidal soap, I don't think, because you just can't put it on everything. So do you have any suggestions?
I do. First of all, let's clarify what insect we're talking about. Are these brown?
No, they're little black guys.
They're black? Okay. But yeah. They're not white.
No.
Okay. So fungus gnats are a little bit smaller than fruit flies, and they are kind of dark brownish black, and they're very annoying. And if you have seen an increase in this kind of insect since you brought the plants in, chances are they came with the plant. Spraying the plant won't help because they're not really on the plant. They're in the soil mix.
Oh.
So there are a couple of things that you can do to alleviate this problem. The first thing that I recommend is that you don't water the plants for a while. And I don't mean to like let them wilt down and die, but to let the soil completely dry out in between waterings. And the reason for that is that the larvae, the babies of this particular insect, will live in the top inch to inch and a half or so of soil mix.
Mm-hmm.
And they feed on that organic matter, the peat moss and the organic mm-hmm. matter, compost, and things that might be in the soil mix. They have to have moisture to go through their life stages. So if you let the soil completely dry out and let it stay dry, you know, for a day or so, then you will be effectively killing the larvae. So just make sure that you let the soil dry out in between waterings. The second thing that I would recommend is that at your local garden center, you should be able to find a little packet. It's like an envelope of something either called yellow sticky cards or white fly traps. And this is simply a sturdy card, bright yellow, that's coated with a really strong glue. And they come with little stakes or little hangers, and you just need to put them near your plants for a couple of days, and what they will do is trap the adults.
Yep, I remember old fly traps that they used to have hanging from the ceilings. Yep,
right. So now, the difference is that these are not coated with an insecticide. They're non-toxic. It's just glue. But the yellow color is so appealing to the fungus gnats that they are drawn to it. And so as soon as they get close to that yellow sticky card, the glue like reaches out and grabs them.
I'm going to run right out and get some.
I just have to tell you, it's so rewarding because it's so effective so quickly, and you can count the number of insects that it grabs, and it's like, yes, I'm doing something.
You got me excited, too. Thank you so much.
All right. Thanks.
You're welcome.
Thanks a lot for calling, Louise. Appreciate it. Patty Nagai, UW Extension Horticulture Educator for Racine County, our guest today. I'm Larry Mueller here on Garden Talk on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Patty Nagai, our guest on this edition of Garden Talk. And Patty, Tom sent us a photo on our Facebook page of an arborvita that has covered with snow and hanging, you know, the snow's kind of hanging over. And I noticed our neighbors who are kind of behind us have some huge arborvita, and those arborvita were just leaning over in the snow. Should we try to knock that snow off?
You know, a lot of times we recommend that you just leave things alone. But with a heavy, wet snow like this, when the plants are not, you know, they're not truly dormant, and especially with arborvitas, they're just so weak-witted. It is, you know, it actually is a good idea to go out there and knock some of that snow off. But, it's one of those things that I hesitate to recommend because some people are so vigorous in doing it that they can do more damage than good. So you do need to do it carefully. You know, you don't want to go out there, you know, with a humongo stick and start beating on your tree. You need to do it with love and gently, you know, so that you're not doing more damage. But in storms like we've had, you know, yesterday with the heavy, wet, really wet snow, that can do a lot of damage. And unfortunately, a lot of damage may have already been done because just the initial onslaught of that heavy snow, you know, in some places the snow came down so fast that it accumulated really quickly. And that can really be detrimental. And with the cold weather, it's not going to melt. It's not going to go away. And so if you can get out there and very gently push the snow off and then, you know, try to get the branches back upright, that will really help with things like arborvita, you know, the junipers, the arborvita, things that are a little bit softer. You know, they're not as sturdy as an oak tree, for example. You don't have to worry about your oak trees. But some of those softer branched shrubs, it would be very helpful to get that heavy snow off of them.
And we have Nancy from Ridgeland with a question for you, Patty.
Okay.
Hi, Nancy.
Hello. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Happy holidays to both of you.
To you as well.
Thank you.
I'm going to go back to the poinsettias, and I haven't quite overcome the guilt complex you talked about, so I have a poinsettia from last year that is growing beautifully, and I'm just wondering, is there a way to encourage them to sprout their red leaves again at the ends of the tips? Is that a light thing, or is that something that's just not going to happen in this climate?
It will happen in this climate, and if your plant is in a place where it's getting primarily natural light, that is, it's not getting a lot of artificial light at night, you may see blooms starting to develop in about February. And so I have actually overwintered poinsettias and kept them going for years, and then I call them my Valentine's Day plants because that's typically when they bloom and produce the red bracts, which you are correct, those are, that is leaf tissue Those red bracts are actually leaf tissue. However, when you do it in your home, unless you are really, really good with the light and the nutrients and the cutting back and all of the things that professional growers do, the blooms are not going to be as impressive as one that you could buy from the store, and so the bracts will not be as big, or you may not have as many of them. Mm-hmm. But you certainly can get it to blossom again, and it's the blooming that triggers that red coloration of the bract tissue.
Okay.
Otherwise, you know, if you wanted it to actually do that at Christmas, you would have to start regulating its nighttime environment in early September. And
okay.
what that means
All
is
right.
that they have to have long nights. So, you know, a minimum of 12 hours of complete darkness.
Okay,
beginning.
Well, I will just be happy with a Valentine's Day gift then, if it happens to give me that.
And then I would say go out to your local nursery garden center, your favorite place, and buy a new poinsettia for your home to keep it company. So
yes.
Oh, that would be good.
Okay, I can do that. Well, thank you very much.
Yep.
You're welcome.
Thanks, Nancy. Thank you for calling. Patty DeGuy, our guest, and here's Gary and Rhinelander with a question. Hi, Gary.
Hi, glad. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
Hey, I acquired, my wife had bought me a Madagascar cactus a few months ago.
Okay.
And it's doing very well. I repotted it about 2 months ago, and it was getting new foliage on it and such. And here recently, in the last month, it's the leaves have been turning yellow. And here in the last couple of days, out of probably the 30 or 40 leaves it had on it, there's about 10 of them that turned yellow. And I don't water it until, you know, until it's pretty dry. I put my finger in there, down an inch, and it is in a southern window. I do have electric heat, so it is somewhat close to electric heat. So any suggestions?
Well, what type of light is it getting?
It's getting sunlight, you know, out of a southern window. I mean, it's not
okay.
getting a whole lot, but it's getting some.
Okay, and what kind of soil mix is it potted in?
It's in a plastic with peat moss.
Okay. Okay, well, the Madagascar cactus, it's a succulent, and does it have the palmy fronds on the top of it?
Yes, it does.
Okay. And so it likes to be dry. It really, really likes a lot of light. And so there are a couple of things that come to mind that might cause the leaves to yellow and drop off. One is that it's getting too much moisture. And with a peat-based mix, it's a little bit harder to regulate that the dry side of moisture with a peat-based mix. So you might want to, instead of having it in the plastic pot with the peat-based soilless mix, you might want to look at a soil mix that's specifically for cacti and succulents. And those are typically 50% sand. And so
okay.
they'll stay a little bit on the drier side. It's a little easier to keep them dry. Because I worry with plants like that, especially in these cooler temperatures, you know, that if they ever get too wet, you know, they will develop root rots really quickly, and that
okay.
can cause that yellowing foliage. So that's one of my concerns, is that perhaps it's holding too much moisture in that soil. So you might want to look at a 50% sand mixture and maybe even put it in a clay pot, something that breathes as opposed to the plastic pot. And then the second issue is the amount of light it's getting. It may just be responding to lower light levels. You know, it is Wisconsin. We are at the shortest daytime of the year. You know, we, in fact, is today the shortest day
I
of
believe,
the year.
Yeah, it might be.
Today.
Yeah.
And so we're looking at not just low light quality because it's winter. We're looking at short duration. So if you have a way to enhance the light by putting in a fluorescent light bank really close to it nearby, or a plant light. You know, they make some really cool plant lights now that you can attach to various things and get them directed right onto the plant. If there's a way to increase the light level, that might help. But my feeling is my first suggestion is probably what's wrong, that it's just staying too wet.
And thanks very much for calling. Patty Nagai, UW Extension Horticulture Educator for Racine County. I'm Larry Mueller, Judith Sears-Poisson, our producer on Garden Talk on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Great to have you listening in here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here with my guest, Patty Nagai, UW Extension Horticulture Educator for Racine County. Great to have her along. Thank you so much for listening in. Call us with your questions at 800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org, or you can post a question, even a photo, on my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show, and we'd certainly love to hear from you. Susie in Springfield, Illinois, has a question, so let's go to her. Hi, Susie.
Good morning.
Morning.
I actually have two holiday questions and a little story on one. My father had a client over to their house and was dismayed, to say the least, at the body odor from the client. And after the client left the living room and left the house, my father said something to my mother, and because the smell lingered, and it was horrid, unfortunately, my mother knew what it was. The paper wipes that were blooming on the table next to where the client had sat. So, I think everybody who's had paper wipes can appreciate their beauty, but abhor their smell. So,
yes.
my two holiday plant questions are two different plants, but one, how can you counter the smell from the lovely paper wipes? And two, how can you get a Christmas cactus to bloom? And I'll take my answers off the phone.
Okay. All right.
Oh, that's funny. Yeah, paper wipes are very stinky. So I would my response to that one would be don't plant them.
Yeah. Yes.
Because, you know, once the fragrance starts, it's really, really difficult to counteract that. Placing them in a colder environment can somewhat knock down the fragrance. And it also makes the blooms last longer, so you will have the fragrance longer, but it will be a little bit diminished. But there are other types of bulbs that you can plant that don't have that odor, and you can do them the same way as paper whites. And so I would look for different cultivars and different types of bulbs that just don't have that, because it is a very bad odor. I personally wouldn't grow paper wipes in my house because they're beautiful. She's right. They're beautiful.
Yeah.
They just don't smell very good. And, you know, a lot of times with bulbs that we typically see outside, even the hyacinths, you know, that outside is a wonderful fragrance. But when you have hyacinths growing in your home, the fragrance can be overwhelming. But it smells nicer than the paper whites.
So yeah, for sure.
I would say just, you know, select a plant. I know a lot of people who have done the paper whites, and when they start flowering, they actually put them outside because they cannot tolerate the odor. So, and this time of year, when you put paper whites outside, they'll freeze.
Yeah.
And they'll look pretty until they thaw, and then they'll turn to mush. But it is a possibility. Let's see. The second question was how to get a Christmas cactus to bloom.
Yeah.
Christmas cactus, Thanksgiving cactus, and Easter cactus. They're three different species that are often called the same thing. And each of them responds a little bit differently to day length, or as we discussed with the poinsettia, it's actually the length of the night. So the period of darkness that needs to be a certain length before they will set blooms. So if they're in your home in an area where they get a lot of artificial light at night, chances are, you know, they're not going to bloom as well as they would if they were, you know, only subjected to natural light. And if they're only subjected to natural light, they really do bloom at their appropriate times. Mm-hmm. So the Thanksgiving cactus will bloom sometime around Thanksgiving, Christmas around Christmas, and Easter around Easter. So if you have a Christmas cactus and it doesn't bloom until Easter, chances are
it's an Easter one.
It's an Easter cactus. And they are different species, and so they do look a little bit different. But they, you know, they have different bloom times. Now, a lot of times the Thanksgiving cactus will bloom again at Christmas, which is it like, you know, double. You know, that's like a bonus.
I must have had a Thanksgiving one in my office. It bloomed all the time. I mean, it was never out of bloom, it seemingly. But, of course, I never watered it, and except just once in a great while, and it just had the artificial light for 9 hours or so a day while I was in the office.
And that was probably a nice supplemental light for it during the day. But then at night, it's those night times that actually trigger the blossoming. And so I have two, and they bloomed at Thanksgiving beautifully. I mean, they were just loaded with blossoms. And now they're budding out again, so they're going to bloom a second time.
Cool.
So that happens. But, you know, the key to it, you know, there's several little tricks. They're very easy to grow, and they're much easier to get to bloom than like a poinsettia. They're not quite as sensitive as the poinsettia, but they will, you know, they will turn that blossoming off if they get too much artificial light at night. But they like to be in a cacti and succulent soil mix also, that, you know, like a 50% sand mix. They don't like to be overwatered. They don't really like to be moved, you know, especially once they set flower buds. You should just leave them alone because they will drop those flower buds if they get moved too much. And then they also like slightly cooler temperatures, so they don't appreciate a hot window or being near a vent, a heat vent, or anything like that. So keep them a little bit on the cool side. Make sure they're exposed only to natural light. And try not to overwater them, and they should flower at the appropriate time.
Chris from Maguanago emailed, this is to do with the black fungus gnats. He said he taped a piece of yellow legal pad to a piece of cardboard, and he smeared it with honey and laid it amongst the plants. 24 hours later, it was covered with the critters.
That's funny.
Yeah, he also placed a saucer of cider vinegar between the pots.
Yes.
And they're drawn to the dish and drown, and they found the surface of this dish was also covered with dead critters. Very successful.
Yes, wine will work also. If you have fungus gnats and you leave a little bit of wine out, that works as well. I have never heard the honey on yellow paper, but I can see why it would work, and it would be a double attractant to them because, of course, it's sweet and sticky. That's funny. And if it works, great.
And a very inexpensive way of getting rid of them.
Yes.
You know, most of us have a little honey in our house.
And you know, it is an insect that's just incredibly annoying. In large concentrations, it can do some damage to the plant because it will chew on roots a little bit. But it's mostly just an annoying insect. And it's also an insect that just doesn't, you don't really need to use any insecticides to control it. It's more a cultural problem.
Patricia in Madison, thanks for calling. Hi.
Thank you. Thank you for taking my call, and happy holidays to you both.
To you as well.
Thank you. I was wondering if your guest is familiar with the Christmas rose and if we have something comparable in this country. I just returned recently from Austria and Germany. And in the Christmas markets, and also I did see some live ones blooming. The Christmas rose is a white flower with five single petals, and it is featured a lot on Christmas cards. Over the years, I always thought it was a magnolia on my cards, but now I realize that was a Christmas rose.
Mm-hmm. Well, we have hellebores here. And we have hellebores that are hardy in our area. So they're plants that are not grown as houseplants, but they're grown outdoors. And so it also goes by the name of Linton rose.
Ah.
So do you know what I'm talking about?
The helleborus, I am. But what was the other, Linton or Linton?
Linton rose.
L-I-N.
Rose. Unless there's a different plant that they're talking about, You know, and this is the problem with common names, especially when you cross even different regions of our country, much less going over to other countries. Common names can be very misleading. But Christmas rose is another name for Lenten rose, L-E-N-T-E-N, both of which have, you know, religious connotations associated with Christianity. And so the Lenten rose blooms very early in spring. It's one of the earliest flowering plants we have here in Wisconsin and can bloom as early as the end of February, but usually it's March, you know, when it starts to flower. And it does have five petals, and there are white ones, and there are also pink and mauve and green and all different colors. It's a beautiful flower. The plants are very easy to grow, and some of them, at least in southeast Wisconsin, they tend to be evergreen. So they grow really low to the ground. They have really heavy, leathery kind of foliage, and then the flowers appear in the very early in the spring.
So it wouldn't be something that would bloom outdoors at this time, like over in Europe?
No, but it does bloom here very, very early in the spring.
It was beautiful to see, and now I know what it was on my Christmas cards in the past.
They are gorgeous, yes, and it's a lovely plant to add to your garden.
Thank you very much.
Yeah,
you're
thanks.
Welcome.
Thanks, Patricia, for calling. And Brett, thank you for calling. Hi.
Hello. Thanks for taking my call. I just was listening earlier about your tinfoil on your lime tree and the suggestion of putting hardware cloth in a pot to keep the cats out. And I got a much more colorful one that serves two purposes and a much more eye-appealing in my eyes, is for people that like to collect small rocks, you know, quarter size up to, say, 2 inches. You can put them in your pot, cover the dirt, the cat won't bother you or dig in there anymore, and then you have a really nice, beautiful selection of rocks that makes it very appealing.
That's a great idea. I really like that idea, and if I didn't have, I don't know, over 100 houseplants in my house, I probably would do that, and I may do that with some of my plants just because I think it's a good idea and I think it would look really pretty. But I don't have enough rocks for all of my plants. But that is a great idea because you can buy those colorful river stones, river wash stones at hobby stores.
I have a solution to your lack of rock problem because we are not too far from one of the best rock-picking places in the whole country. If you go up to Munising, Michigan, Hiawatha National Park on the Lake Superior seashore there, you'll find rocks that are like quarter size of colors you won't find just about anywhere else, and they're thin, like 2 or 2, so they are perfect for doing this because they're lightweight, don't compress the soil, and they're really beautiful.
Ah.
Wow, this sounds like a great potential industry for Michigan. They could be packaging and selling those.
Thank you. Thank you very much,
Thanks.
Brett.
That's a great idea.
Appreciate it. And let's see. We've got John in Wausau up next, I believe. John, hi.
How's it going?
Going great. Thank you for calling.
Thanks for taking my call. Listen, someone sent me a cutting of a San Pedro cactus from California, and they just said to make sure it healed over on the bottom, and then to plant it in cactus soil and watch the amount of water that I give it. I'm worried that it looks like it's getting a little bit thin, and I don't know if it's really taken or not. Is there anything other than that I can do?
How long have you had it in your soil mix?
Since September.
Okay. Well, you know, they're very slow to develop their roots, and so I'm wondering if it's actually rooted. If you followed the instructions and did you put it in a cactus mix with
yes,
the sand?
Uh-huh.
Okay, good. If you're being careful about not overwatering it, I would say it just needs a little bit more time to adapt. They, of course, will respond to more sunlight. And
maybe I should take it on a vacation somewhere.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's funny. I can see you going had some, through the airport security with
that. Yeah, that's true. It could be used as a weapon, I think. Hey, okay, so I'll just watch that. I got another quick question. At this time of year, I'm used to having live holly plants.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just used to them since I was a kid. And I'm wondering, can you get live holly plants in Wisconsin that you can cultivate indoors?
Well, we do have hollies that grow outdoors here in Wisconsin. They prefer more of an acidic soil, but there are a lot of hollies that are hardy in our area. Winterberry is a great example of it. But, of course, winterberry, for the most part, drops its leaves, and it's just the berries that you see in the winter. It's not like in the southern part of the U.S. where you'll see hollies evergreen, you know, like the American holly and all of those that will be evergreen during the winter with their beautiful red berries. I don't know if you probably could mail order hollies and have them grown as houseplants, but I've never done that. It sounds intriguing, and perhaps I will try it.
Yeah.
I'll tell you what, I will look for that, and if you're on the show next year, I will give you a report on it.
Yeah, I would like a report back to see how it goes. I would look specifically for one of the dwarf cultivars, though.
A dwarf, okay.
You don't want to have to deal with a 15 or 20-foot tree in your home. Although you
anyway.
Can prune them. Yeah, they are a little prickly.
Yeah.
And look for one with the leaf and berry characteristics that you're interested in. Keep in mind, though, to get berries, you have to have a male and a female plant.
Do you think that they could sell those that way? Do they know?
Oh, yes. Yes, okay. They do definitely sell them that way. The male and female holly plants have completely different cultivar names.
Oh, I see.
And it should be very clearly marked.
And can I plant them in the same pot, do you think? Or
if it's a big enough pot, yes, should be able to do that.
Sure.
All right. I will investigate this year, and I'll let you know next year what happens.
Report back,
excellent.
John.
All right. Thanks a lot,
pictures.
You guys.
We want pictures,
yes.
Too.
I'll do that. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you so much for calling, for sure. And by the way, you can join in too at 1-800-642-1234. Patty Nagai, our guest, UW Extension horticulture educator for Racine County. And Norman in Ashland up next. Hi, Norman.
Hello.
Thanks for calling.
I am calling in regard to my lemon trees. I heard you talk about your lime trees.
Yeah.
They're about 7 foot tall. I have two of them, but they don't seem to want to bloom or anything. I was wondering how long it takes for them to grow before they will do that.
Do you know what cultivar of lemon you have?
No, I don't. I got a lemon a number of years ago that the seeds had sprouted like inside the fruit, so I thought I'd plant them. And now they've grown up. And
you have big trees.
Yes.
And unfortunately, you may have big trees that won't flower for you because they were grown from seed. So most of the lemon cultivars that are sold for houseplants and to be kept kind of in a dwarf stage are specific hybrids, and they're propagated by cuttings, you know, not by the seed. And so the seed is a product of that union of male and female, and so the seed often contains different genetics. So you get a lot of different sort of characteristics coming out in seed-grown plants. If you were in Florida and these had grown in the soil and had plenty of sunshine and room to grow, they would probably be developing into 25 or 30-foot trees before they would flower. Okay. And eventually they would flower and form fruit, but the fruit might not look like the fruit from which you got the seed, okay? Because it's a product of a sexual cross, and so you've got different genetics in play there. So typically, when we want to grow a fruiting plant, we will purchase either a cutting or a plant that's been grown from a cutting from the parental type, and that way we know what the parent, you know, what the fruit will look like. So you have some great indoor plants that are quite tall, and I bet the foliage is very fragrant because the citrus foliage itself has a nice lemony fragrance to it.
It is when we go and rub on the leaves and that.
Yeah, that's lovely.
Man.
They smell
so then,
so
since
good.
They're so tall, could I prune these down to keep them, the growth controlled a little better?
You can try that. You can certainly practice your pruning on them. Now, citrus are really funny about pruning, and their branches tend to come out at very odd angles. But since you want to maintain, since you live in Wisconsin and you can't obviously plant them outdoors, you need to be able to maintain them as an indoor plant, I would suggest pruning them back and practice your pruning on them to see how they make their breaks. And so when we prune, you need to look for an outward-facing bud. And so you need to look, and on citrus, the buds are really oppressed against the branches, so they're kind of hard to see. But you need to make sure that when you make your cut, that the bud that's immediately below your cut is a bud that's going to kind of grow out as opposed to in. So you would want to make sure that your plant maintains a pleasant shape and that you don't get a lot of crossing branches or branches going towards the inside, growing towards the inside of the tree and things like that. And I would say, you know, try not to be overly aggressive in your pruning to start with until you see how it's going to respond.
Yeah.
Okay, well, thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. And Sharon in southern Wisconsin, thanks to you as well. Thank you for calling.
Yes, thank you for taking my call, too. You were talking about the Christmas cactus and Thanksgiving cactus and such as that.
Mm-hmm.
And I have a Christmas cactus that's about, 25, 35 years old. It was given to me. But anyway, the way I get it to bloom, I've got it in the basement where it's very mm-hmm. cool, and mm-hmm. I just back off on the watering
mm-hmm.
of it, and then about a month later it'll be in bloom. You know, it'll set the bloom
nice.
Pretty soon, and then it'll be in bloom. But I had a Thanksgiving cactus, and it always bloomed at Thanksgiving because I did the same thing with it.
Mm-hmm.
Now, have you ever heard of mice eating a Thanksgiving cactus?
Hmm.
No.
The mice got in our basement, and they chewed that one down to nothing.
Oh, my.
They didn't touch the Christmas cactus. But
they really like the Thanksgiving cactus. That's funny.
And I
would think that they would taste about the same.
Yeah, it's that turkey aroma from the Thanksgiving one.
I don't know. It might have just, I don't know why they would eat one and not the other.
Anyway,
and you know, a lot of the cacti are edible, so that I guess that doesn't surprise me that they would eat it, but it's funny.
Yeah. Well, do you know where I can get a Thanksgiving cactus? I've called the local greenhouses, mm-hmm. and they don't have never heard of it. So,
You know, they may have them and not even realize it. I have seen them even in the grocery stores from time to time. And so the Thanksgiving cactus looks a little bit different from the Christmas cactus. The leaf, the modified leaf of the cactus, of course, is what grows out and produces the flower buds. But
right. The
Thanksgiving cactus, that part of the cactus is a lot broader.
Right.
So it's kind of a bigger, coarser looking plant. The Christmas cactus tends to be a little skinnier. And so
also the bloom is different.
Well, the bloom can be different on a lot of them now because they've got hybrids and different cultivars that have like double blooms on them.
Yeah.
And they come in different colors too. You can get, you know, a whole range of pinks and reds on those different cactus. So that the bloom itself is not necessarily a good indicator of the kind of cactus it is. But the leaf, the modified leaf stem, the width of that is a pretty good indicator that would be a Thanksgiving cactus.
Right.
You know, the only thing I can recommend is if you know, you can look online and see if you can mail order one. But other than that, I would just prior to Thanksgiving, you know, check some of the retailers that don't necessarily have plants as their primary product. So, you know, things that stores that, like the big box stores or the grocery stores that bring seasonal plants in, a lot of times they will have Thanksgiving cactus on their displays. And they might be labeled Christmas cactus, but, you know, if they're blooming at Thanksgiving and they have the wider leaf, It's a Thanksgiving cactus.
They're pretty sure it's a Thanksgiving cactus. And Sharon, thank you so much for calling. Really appreciate your call. Well, I tell you what, Patty Nagai, our guest. Patty is a UW Extension horticulture educator for Racine County. She's been with us many times here on Garden Talk on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Growing plants, whether indoors or out, really helps us to connect with nature. And as you look out over a very white landscape over a good part of Wisconsin, you can't help but appreciate how incredibly hardy those plants are, those outside ones are, to be able to stand up to a Wisconsin winter. Hi, Larry Mueller here. Patty Nagai, my guest, is a UW Extension horticulture educator for Racine County. Always has lots of great information to share. Patty, thanks again for spending time with us today. Appreciate it very much.
Well, it's my pleasure. You know, I enjoy answering people's questions and learning new things from your listeners.
Yeah, I learn something every single time. It's great fun. And speaking about those listeners, you can join in with your question at 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or go to my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. And on the Facebook page, there's a photo of a peace lily. Plant's probably 20 years old. Becca says he's had it transplanted a few times in her office with lots of life, but out of direct sunlight. The leaf tips are always brown, and now the new flower is brown too. And she's got a picture of that. And you can see the brown tips on that peace lily. You may or may not see it, Patty, but
I can't see the photo, but I know exactly what she's talking about because I have seen that before.
Yeah. What's the deal with it?
That's a really old one. That's good that she's been able to keep it going for so long. A lot of times peace lilies, you know, they're given as gifts frequently. It's considered one of the easier house plants that flowers, you know, to grow in the home. You know, it's supposed to be very easy to care for. But what I find is that frequently people don't understand what the plant needs, you know, and they tend to underwater it to the point of it, you know, folding up its little leaves and then collapsing, and then they water it, you know, so that it perks back up right away. And I've heard many people say, well, that's how my plant tells me that it needs water. You know, but the truth is if you're letting your plant collapse like that and let the leaves fold under before you water it, you've really let it go too dry. And so every time you do that, you damage the roots a little bit more. And every time you damage the roots a little bit more, you will eventually see the effects of that in the foliage. So when you start to see browning around the leaves, you start to see foliage that maybe doesn't look quite as big or healthy or maybe a little twist to it. That's typically the response to that underwatering. Overwatering can also be just as bad, though. You never want the plant to sit in water because then you can get root rot setting in, and that can cause the foliage to yellow and turn yellow and then brown. Sometimes it can cause the flowers to turn brown as well. And so the browning of the flower could be an indication that it has not been watered correctly, you know, that it has experienced some sort of uneven watering during the time that the flower was being produced. The other thing that peace lilies really need is proper nutrition. And houseplants in general, we say to stop fertilizing them over the winter months. But plants that are still growing and still producing flowers need fertilizer, especially, you know, the peace lily that is constantly or should be constantly producing flowers. You need to select a fertilizer that's for flowering plants that has some additional nutrients in it. And so by following the instructions on the fertilizer package and fertilizing appropriately, you should be able to recover normal blooms again in time.
Then a caller who wonders where you got your lemon tree from. I've got a lime tree, which I think I got from Sears. I ordered it online.
Oh, you told me that you ordered your lime tree from Sears, which I didn't realize Sears sold plants.
A bear's lime tree, yeah.
That's really fun. My Bear's Lime I got from a local nursery in Menominee Falls, and they got it from Monrovia Nursery out in California. So that's where my Bear's Lime came from. But my lemon trees were special ordered for me by a place in Racine. And, you know, it's been so long, I don't remember where they got them from, but it was from, I know it was from Florida, but I don't remember what company they got them from. And it's called a Eureka lemon.
Eureka.
And okay. Eureka. And so it is a true lemon. You know, the Meyer lemon is also a very popular houseplant, but the Meyer lemon tastes a little bit different. It's a little sweeter, and it's not quite as acidic. The Eureka lemon is like a real lemon. It's very tart. It's very, very juicy. It has a real strong lemon taste, and the rind makes very good lemon zest. And so I really like my Eureka. At some point, if I had more room, I might get a Meyer as well because it has a different flavor to it. But the Eureka lemon is the one that I have.
Judy in Wind Lake, thank you for calling. Hi.
Hi. I was wondering about my amaryllis bulb. I bought one at the hardware store. I usually buy one every Christmas. And I've had it in the dirt, and I've been watering it for about 3 weeks. And a leaf has not shot out at all. There's no activity at all on the bulb. Is there something I can do to jumpstart that thing?
No, you just have to wait. And, you know, it could be that your bulb is not viable. You know, it's interesting that bulbs are, they seem pretty tough and reliable, and you just, you know, throw them in the ground and they shoot up their shoots and flower. But there are some things that can negatively affect them. One of them is the gas ethylene. And so if bulbs are ever exposed to ethylene, which you can get from fruit, that they may not ever grow, or they certainly won't flower. So that can inhibit their growth, and it will definitely inhibit their flowering if they're exposed to ethylene. So that's why we always say if you're going to pre-chill bulbs, you know, things that have to be chilled, like tulips and daffodils and grape hyacinths and things like that, to never put them in the refrigerator with your fruit, because that's enough to stunt their growth. Did it feel nice and firm when you planted it? It wasn't mushy or soft or anything? Then I would say it's just a matter of time. Make sure you're not overwatering it. You can let it go dry, completely dry, in between watering. But I think it's just a matter of time. It should shoot up from the shoots. Well, you know, 3 weeks is a long time. I would think it would be doing something by now.
Yeah.
I would say if you're not seeing any signs of growth in another week or two, then the bulb is probably not viable.
Okay.
Good luck. Well,
thank you so much.
Sorry. I wish I had happy answers for everybody. But
and, you know, you're mentioning fruit and ethylene. Someone told me that you should not put, if you get a fruit basket for Christmas, you shouldn't put it under the Christmas tree because it'll have an effect on the tree. Because of the ethylene?
Ethylene is an amazing little chemical because, of course, it's a volatile gas, and so it does go up into the air. I wouldn't think in an open room that it would be that much of a problem, but it could cause needle drop on the branches that were closest to the fruit basket. You know, in a big room where you've got fruit sitting out, that ethylene gets dispersed throughout the whole room pretty easily. But when you're talking about a closed system like the drawer in a refrigerator where you might have your apples, you can get a significant amount of ethylene built up in that drawer.
Plenty
to stop growth on tulip or daffodil bulbs.
And a couple of callers have responded to the person who's from Michigan who was talking about getting rocks from the state parks over there. Here in Wisconsin, you're not supposed to remove anything from state parks, so even rocks. So,
I wondered about that when he was talking about it. You know, if that really was a state park, is that legal?
I didn't know because it was a Michigan.
You're taking those rocks.
I wasn't sure about that, but here in Wisconsin, you know what? If my daughter sticks a rock in her pocket and goes off with it, I guess it's illegal, but I probably wouldn't scold her. I don't know.
Right. Well, if it's just one, then
if it's
a child. But yeah, in general, that's true. I mean, even when you go to visit a botanical garden or
sure.
a park, you know, you might say, oh, they won't miss this one little flower, this one little cutting. But the fact is, if everybody did that,
there'd be nothing left.
There would be nothing left. And so that's why those rules are in place. It makes sense.
Yep, does. Marge in Green Bay. Hi.
Good afternoon. How is everybody there?
We are doing just great. How are you?
I'm fine, sir. You know, your little dissertation there on the cacti? I can't tell you how much I appreciate your show in that you tell me something new every time I listen.
Oh, good.
I didn't know there was a difference between Thanksgiving cacti and Christmas cacti. Now I know which kinds I've got.
What have you got?
Which ones do you have?
Oh, I got some of each.
Oh,
good.
In fact, I know the one, now that I know which one is which, my Thanksgiving cactus was outstanding this year.
With
blooms.
Excellent.
And the reason my cactuses do well, I think, is because, right about the 1st of May, I put them all out on my front porch.
Mm.
And I don't bring them in until about the 15th of October, longer if we don't get any freezing nights.
Mm-hmm.
And I have noticed that when I do that, they just take off and bloom like crazy.
Right. And I put my Christmas cactus outside. Well, it's actually a Thanksgiving cactus, but I put them outside also. And there are some plants you can do that, and it makes them very happy. I put my lemon and my lime outside.
Mine are on a west porch, mm-hmm. shaded by a big pine, so they don't get full-blown burnt sun, you know?
Yep.
But I have to tell you, too, about cats. And cacti plants. My cats chew my cacti plants.
Hmm.
And then throw up.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's what.
So what are you going to do?
Yeah, you can't. Well, you could put the plant in a cage. Or you could put your cat in a cage.
Yeah, one or the other.
and for cats that like to chew on plants, that's really hard because you can't put a plant up high enough to avoid cats. They can jump, and so they get to them. And they have their favorites to chew on, it's true.
One thing you could try, cats, apparently, many cats do not like the smell of citrus.
Mm-hmm.
You can, if you've got some citrus, you put a little of that around the cactus. You might be able to keep them away from it, but it's, not all cats dislike citrus, but many do, and of course we like the smell of citrus, so
right, so that's a pleasant odor, unlike a lot of the animal repellents
have
a very unpleasant smell that you probably wouldn't want to use in your home.
I don't use lawn fertilizer or any of that stuff.
Mm-hmm. Well, citrus would that's natural. I'd give that
you might try that.
Why not? And thanks for calling, Marge, appreciate it. And Sam and Marinette, appreciate your call, too. Hi.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I have a question about chestnut trees.
Okay.
Are they hardy? What kind of chestnut tree can I have that I can grow up in the Marinette area and that'll make it through the winter and survive a blight that I'm told killed all of them throughout the U.S.?
Yep.
That's a very good question. That I don't really have an answer for, because I know that there has been a lot of research done on chestnut breeding recently, but I don't know that there is a chestnut yet available that is actually recommended for Wisconsin, and it's not because of the hardiness factor, it is because of the blight.
Okay.
That would be a good question for Laura Dahl, one of our woody plant experts through UW Extension, to see how far that research has gone, but I just don't have a good answer for you for that.
Bruce Allison probably would have a good answer for that, too.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Okay, what else could I plant that deer like that's a hardy tree,
okay.
other than cedar? I mean a nut-bearing tree in our area.
What about hazelnut?
I have no idea if they... I'll plant it. I ain't scared.
Hazelnut are very, very hardy. They're shrubs, though. They're not trees, but they're readily available. It's a native species, but there are starting to... We're starting to have some cultivars that are available. Hazelnut is really easy to grow, and it does grow in most regions of Wisconsin.
Of course, in the long term, it's oak.
You want something the deer will eat?
Yes.
Yes. Is that backwards? I know.
No,
it's okay. I understand. I just wanted to make sure I had it correct.
Yes, I'm doing a couple of things. I have a little bit of property in northern Michigan, just on the border, and I planted some walnut trees for the small game, and I want to plant something for the big game. And okay. I just want to, you know, I like animals.
Yeah.
Well, that's very good of you to do that. It's important that they have healthy foods to eat.
Well, the long term still, oaks are still good for the long term, the acorns. Mm-hmm. They love acorns.
Yes, they do.
Yeah. Oaks are a wonderful thing to grow. And, you know, if people are planting trees for the next generation, oaks would be the tree of choice.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. So a little bit of oaks and continue on my walnuts and then try some hazelnuts.
Yep.
Yep.
All right. Well, thank you very much.
Yep. Thanks a lot for calling. And Connie in Portage. Hello.
Good morning.
Hi.
Hi. I have an African violet that is scary. It has gone from about 4 inches across to 14, and it's blooming. Oh, it's just gorgeous. It's huge. But I've never had one do that before, and it's got babies everywhere. And I'm wondering, should I fertilize?
Sounds like you're already fertilizing.
Yeah.
Well, I didn't do it for a while. It's been about a couple months since I fertilized it.
Yeah. It's funny, because violets are, I think they're a really interesting houseplant, because when they're really happy, they can grow and increase in size very rapidly. I had one in my office in a north-facing window that did that, and it just went from this tiny little, a tiny little plant, and I repotted it because I was using it for classes, and we had pulled a lot of the leaves off of it, so it was really decrepit looking. I just stuck it in my office in a north-facing window, and within a couple of months, it was just enormous. And so by the next year, I had plenty of leaves to use for my class. Eventually, I killed it because we probably took too many cuttings off of it, and there were other issues with not watering it, which is a problem.
Yeah.
But sometimes they will go through growth spurts like that. And, you know, one of the things that you have to watch for with the violets is when they're growing really fast like that and getting very large, they will develop a sort of a cane-like stem. So they can actually fall over and they'll break down at the base. And if you're not watching it carefully, you might not realize it's broken. And so it's important to keep it potted. You might need to repot it again to make sure that it's set appropriately at the right level in the soil. You can take cuttings off of the leaves, or you can, if you've got little shoots coming up, you might need to take those shoots off. But I would say keep doing what you're doing, because you're obviously doing something really well.
Yeah, absolutely. Gigi, on the other hand, has sent us a Facebook comment with a photo of her African violet. She says she has it outside all summer, only produced a couple of flowers. It's inside now in a southeast window.
African, that might be too bright.
She had a healthy gardenia, too, outside all summer.
Mm-hmm.
Only produced two flowers inside. Yeah, maybe it's too bright. Maybe she should be on the north side, eh?
Yeah. Well, gardenias are a little bit different. They, in the south, they like to be in a more shaded area. But here in Wisconsin, it would probably be very difficult to give them too much sun. So they require a little bit brighter light. But gardenias don't typically flower until spring. And so it may just be the wrong time of year for that particular plant to flower. As long as it's healthy and it's growing and, she's not seeing any scalded leaves or anything like that, it's probably fine as far as the light is concerned. The African violet, that may be too much light for it. North-facing windows, east-facing windows, not necessarily direct sun, but bright light is what African violets prefer.
There we go. And we have Carol in Fond du Lac. Hi, Carol.
Hi, how are you?
Great, thank you for calling. You've got an orchid question for us?
Yes, I have two orchid plants, and I'm wondering, is there any way I can get them to rebloom?
Are these the moth-type orchids, the Phalaenopsis orchids?
Oh, I really don't know.
Okay. Do you remember, did you buy them, like, at a local retailer?
No, my son and daughter-in-law in Appleton bought them at a farmer's market.
Oh,
I bet they're
Phalaenopsis.
Yeah, I bet they are too.
So with the Phalaenopsis, there are a couple of things that you can do to encourage flowering. One is that during the year, it's really important to fertilize them just about every time you water. You water them with a very dilute fertilizer, but you only water orchids about once every 2 weeks. And they should be in a fir bark type of planting medium, not a soil. So they need to stay a little bit on the dry side, but they do have some pretty high fertilizer requirements. So you continue to fertilize during the time when they're developing new foliage, and it needs to be an orchid fertilizer, something that will help promote flowering. If it's a Phalaenopsis, they should be starting to bloom about now. You should start mm-hmm. seeing some new shoots coming out that will support the flowers.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't need a huge amount of light, but they do need to be in a bright light situation, but not direct sun.
Mm-hmm.
And if they're getting the right amount of light, and they're not overwatered, and they are getting enough fertilizer, you know, they're usually pretty good about reblooming.
Absolutely. Thank you, Carol, for calling. And Patty, thank you so much.
You're very welcome.
Merry Christmas. Happy New Year.
Merry Christmas.
We'll see you in 2013.
I will be happy to join you again, Larry, anytime.
Patty DeGuy, our guest. Great to have her along. UW Extension Horticulture Educator for Racine County. Monday at 11, Santa Claus joins me along with his elf, and we'll be talking only to youngsters on Monday. Stay with us.